Future Nonprofit is presented by Classy. Are you a nonprofit feeling the pressure of constant change and evolving supporter expectations? Are you searching for new ways to engage your community in this new era of fundraising? At Future Nonprofit, we seek out the top technology helping propel our sector forward, which is why Classy by GoFundMe is a trusted partner of ours. Classy's online fundraising platform empowers organizations to connect, engage, and grow. With Classy's latest innovation, Classy Studio, you can create personalized fundraising experiences that truly resonate. Build connections, unleash creativity, and raise more faster. And now, with new features like intelligent ask amounts, which provide personalized donation amounts for each supporter who lands on your page, and improved embedded donation forms, which lead a donor through an optimized checkout flow without leaving your website. Classy's full suite of tools is further engineered for conversion while also allowing you to create lasting relationships. The only question left is, what will you build? The future of fundraising is now with Classy. For more information, visit classy.org. That's classy.org.
Success for FarmLink looks like a world where food is so accessible that food doesn't feel like food assistance, it's just food access. And I think at that point, we do become obsolete or ubiquitous or whatever it means to no longer be needed in the way that we are today.
In April of 2020, Ben Collier noticed a glaring problem in the food assistance space. That problem was painfully obvious to Ben, and fortunately, so was the solution.
Farms grow a lot of food that never makes it to grocery stores or restaurants, but it's food that could really benefit people. It's food that would taste really good. It's food that's as good as the food we eat, and we want to make sure that everybody has access to that kind of food, and so we help get it to places who can use it.
So Ben started the FarmLink project to fight food insecurity by rescuing food and repurposing surplus produce. It was an easy mission to rally behind, and it quickly brought together a small army of young volunteers, tired of sitting on their hands during the pandemic and eager to be part of something meaningful.
We had this period of time at the start of the pandemic where the world was so in need of something to cheer for, and a bunch of kids banding together during a pandemic to take on something as bipartisan and easy to cheer for as hunger and food waste. It worked in a lot of ways.
As you'll hear in this episode, FarmLink's success has been driven by passion, persistence, and a willingness to continually adapt in order to achieve their goals. We'll hear Ben share how leading with action has gotten FarmLink to where it is today. And he'll describe the growing pains of a young organization that grew in response to an issue that was dramatically heightened by the pandemic, and one that his team is out to solve sustainably and for the long term. I'm Ted Vaughn, and this is a special episode from the Camp Redwood sessions of Future Nonprofit, captured in February of 2024, on-site at the inaugural Camp Redwood, a gathering of some of the world's most influential nonprofit leaders, to connect, collaborate, innovate, and discuss what's next in the nonprofit sector. And now, you're invited to share in those conversations through this series of intimate, lo-fi episodes with some of the biggest visionaries in the nonprofit industry.
I love going all in on whatever it is that feels right. And for me, at the time FarmLink started, there was a huge gap. And so we started FarmLink in April of 2020, which is 2 months after the pandemic began. So in the first couple of months of the pandemic, there were countless stories being written about food waste. And it wasn't that COVID caused these problems, but the halted commercial food industry did mean that food was piling up on farms that otherwise would have been at restaurants and stadiums and airports, wherever else. So there are all these stories about that food waste. And then there were just as many stories about food banks facing the longest lines they'd ever seen, food banks not being able to get enough food through their doors. And I'd never felt like there was such an obvious juxtaposition that felt like something could be done about it. And I do credit my mom. She was cutting out all of these articles. She was sewing masks for people at the start of the pandemic. She was just trying to do something. And she would cut out these articles and leave them outside of me and my brother's door like a humanitarian serial killer. And that was the start of really thinking about this. It was those stories.
I love Ben's reference to his mom as a humanitarian serial killer, leaving notes and articles to inspire the minds and hearts of her sons. It reminds me of an important theme that I've found across multiple interviews that I've been privileged to conduct for this podcast. Almost every nonprofit leader I talk with has someone who, in their past, served as a profound guide, helping them connect dots and discover things they might not have without them. Think about Gandalf from Lord of the Rings, or Obi-Wan Kenobi from Star Wars, or Mr. Miyagi from The Karate Kid, or maybe a coach or teacher you had in your story of origin. Well, in Ben's case, it was the relentless and unflagging messaging from his mom that helped to inspire and guide young Ben in a direction he might not have otherwise gone. That guidance and direction helped inspire FarmLink, and eventually, Ben saw it as more than a charity gig. It became a refuge.
I think we are so nourished by a sense of fulfillment and purpose. And in this period of time, FarmLink wasn't just that for me. It was my whole sense of community. Because 2 months into the pandemic, we suddenly were connecting with students all over the country and beyond. We were 150 self-governing college students that I'd spent 8 hours a day on Zoom with these people. Some of them, many of them are my closest friends now. And what we underestimated in those first couple of months was how strong that community would be in carrying us to the lengths that it did. At the end of the first year, at the end of 2020, we did a winter ceremony where we just all got on Zoom. And we've done this thing many times over that we call just thank yous. It just gives people space to acknowledge each other. And people are starting to tell stories about how this felt like a saving experience for them. And I will share one kid, Joe, who is the bubbliest, happiest guy I've ever met. You could never catch him saying something negative. He gets on screen and he says, "I have to share with you guys, I joined FarmLink a few weeks after my dad passed away from COVID, and I didn't know how I was going to keep going. And FarmLink gave me a space to feel connected to it. And even today, I find myself emotional talking about it because it was so surprising and also so rewarding to feel like, even if this doesn't work, even if we are not the ones to be addressing hunger and we're just a bunch of kids, we still gave a lot of people who were pretty lost a sense of direction that now, even more so looking back, I know has changed a lot of their trajectories and what they chose to do and how they have decided to live their lives. And that's really special.
Volunteers form the backbone of so many nonprofit organizations. Through a combination of timing and resonant purpose, Ben was able to attract a base of dedicated volunteers to FarmLink from the very start. Their grassroots approach, their transparent communication, and that sense of belonging people experienced within the FarmLink community created a culture where each person felt valued, understood, and empowered to contribute meaningfully to the FarmLink mission. But as any organization matures, it reaches a point where enthusiasm is no longer sufficient to sustain momentum. And in order to scale, new structures and systems need to be built.
We had this period of time at the start of the pandemic where the world was so in need of something to cheer for, and a bunch of kids banding together during a pandemic to take on something as bipartisan and easy to cheer for as hunger and food waste. It worked in a lot of ways. But the last couple of years has been a completely different experience. I started working on this full-time in May or June of 2021, so a little over a year into FarmLink. We'd recovered 30 million pounds of food, but we hadn't really confronted the fact that in September, 3 months later, every student was going back to in-person classes. We were trying to figure out who to hire, how to hire. We didn't really even have a hierarchy, though. And so there was a full year from that point until the end of the next school year, you know, May of 2022, was a really difficult transition. And at any point in that year, I couldn't have told you with certainty what FarmLink was going to look like 6 months later. And it felt like every 3 months we were a completely different organization, but I was in such a tough place because we were starting to hire these people who were experienced. They knew what it was like to fundraise in a nonprofit or to be a procurement officer in food banking. And I couldn't give them the accountability that they deserved in a professional workplace. But I also couldn't give all of these students that I'd built this project with the same sense of visibility and leadership that they'd experienced for that first year. And so that year was really difficult, but we got through that school year and it felt like, okay, we know where the student involvement is going, and we know that the full-time team is moving in a direction that they're starting to give me a sense of confidence that this part of the organization is now being run effectively. And I think the last couple of years, what's driven me is feeling like we are putting ourselves in a position to really change this industry. And that is incredibly energizing.
Like many nonprofit founders, Ben started FarmLink by seeing a need and jumping in with both feet. Young leaders, like young organizations, are learning in real time. And when young nonprofits go from infancy to adolescence overnight, it's complex and challenging to sustain momentum and to make good decisions. Young leaders like Ben have deep conviction and passion, but need the scaffolding and support that comes with more seasoned and experienced leaders who can become those real-time guides we talked about earlier.
I think through all of my decisions with the intention of thinking through how many different ways could this go and what am I really trying to get to. And for that reason, when I reach a conclusion, I usually have a pretty strong sense of conviction. And I'm not great once I've reached that point at really changing my mind. And I think that that serves me well in a lot of places, especially where I'm at such risk of imposter syndrome right now. That's one of the biggest struggles that I deal with. But I also think that I'm sure there are times where I've been wrong. And I think respecting the conviction that I do have, but holding space to be proven wrong before we make the wrong move, I think there's always room to improve there.
Socrates said that true wisdom comes from knowing what you do not know. Ben is a young leader who has the humility to recognize the limits of his own wisdom and understanding, and even tap into the sometimes subtle yet significant feelings of imposter syndrome. After 2 decades of supporting and guiding young leaders, I can confidently say that millennials and Gen Z leaders are exceptionally self-aware, which carries with it great opportunity and sometimes great complexity or challenge. There are 2 attributes that Ben models in his leadership that I've found to be exponentially helpful for any young leader wanting to grow their influence and navigate imposter syndrome. First, Ben has the humility to acknowledge that as a 20-something CEO, there are things he doesn't know and even more things he doesn't know he doesn't know. Second, Ben doesn't need to be the smartest person in the room, even though he is a brilliant 25-year-old. He understands that the job of the leader is to identify, empower, and support people with the talent and skill far beyond his own.
Wherever there is a really big gap at FarmLink, that decision-making usually falls on my plate. And if it's something I feel fully unqualified to make a good decision around, that's a really good sign that I should hire someone. And so I think that a time will come where I've gotten to the point that I'm making very few decisions and just telling people and reminding people of where we're trying to go. I could do that from a lot of different roles. Do I envision myself being the CEO? I don't know, because I'm 25. And if FarmLink succeeds to a certain point, you got to think that there's someone who knows a little bit more about how to build a scaling organization than I do. But I do think that right now, so much of what we're doing is about setting that vision, setting the culture, building partnerships with people, and that comes from trust, and I think that I'm in the right place for that.
Ben has a vision he's chasing, but what's its source? Where does it come from? Many nonprofits exist as a response to a pressing problem, but fail to ever come close to solving that problem for any number of legitimate reasons. Sometimes, Nonprofits like FarmLink emerge and present the world with a viable solution that can actually solve the problem, not just manage it.
I don't think that it's the waste that sickens me as much as it is the opportunity that motivates me. We have come from a place of knowing nothing about this industry. We had no relationships with farmers or food banks or funders. And in 2022, we recovered 40 million pounds of fresh produce that we got to food banks and into the existing infrastructure of the charitable food system. Last year, that number is over 110 million pounds of food.
Now, fully donated food sounds like a major loss for the farmers and growers giving it away, but actually, it's not really a loss. Ben goes on to explain why they shifted to not paying for food and how that actually benefits the farmers.
So we almost tripled our impact, and everybody on our team still feels like we're scratching the surface of what's possible. And it costs us almost nothing to do what we're doing. We are advocating for fully donated food. And in our first year at FarmLink, we did pay for food. That's what our donors were giving us money for. But after a year, we realized we can't guarantee we aren't just paying for food that food banks would otherwise be buying, or that we're not just driving up the prices for other hunger-fighting organizations. And so we pivoted and we said, we're not going to pay for food at all, because it still is a huge financial value add to have this safety net for farmers. I spoke with a farmer that spent $15,000 to throw away a truckload of tomatoes a few months ago. And so what we said is, we'll be the safety net. If a farmer can sell their food anywhere, to a food bank, to someone that's going to turn their strawberries into popsicles, whatever it is, do it. But if you can't, which happens to 100 billion pounds of food a year, we want to be the safety net that prevents as much of that as possible from going to waste. We can give them all the information they need to file for the tax benefits that are there. And so a $15,000 cost becomes several thousand dollars back in their pocket. And for many farmers, the value of knowing that your food is feeding people, which is why most of them that I talk to are doing it in the first place.
Ben started FarmLink to address a visible issue. But while moving quickly, they needed to be fully aware of the scale of their impact to make sure that they weren't creating new, less visible, or unintended problems for the communities they were trying to serve. Nonprofit work has a lot of interconnected factors at play. It's critical to understand how different variables can overlap and interact. Why? So you can create holistic strategies that, in the end, have the most positive outcomes and avoid the potential of unintended challenges in the process of solving a real problem. Keep that awareness going, and you can begin to reap the benefits of ecosystem thinking, a way of thinking that moves away from a traditional linear focus on products to a more holistic understanding of how companies, customers, and suppliers connect and the value they exchange. Ecosystem thinking is an alternative approach to delivering value across different groups of stakeholders, and by embracing ecosystem thinking, it allows nonprofits to leverage partnerships, think holistically, and amplify their impact. But it's a team effort.
I think that there are three values or principles that if they were truly embodied by everyone in this industry, the whole space would look radically different. The first is the space needs innovation. The first food bank was invented in 1967, and the definition and design of that food bank is almost the exact same as every food bank looks today. And our food system and world and supply chains have evolved too much for that to be possible. We need to design better solutions to meet our food supply chain where it experiences issues. And that's what we've really tried to prioritize at FarmLink. The food supply chain is national and continental and global. And not to the fault of any individual food bank, most food banks are designed to support one town or county. And so, how can you expect a food bank that is under-resourced, understaffed, focused on feeding the people that are showing up every day to take on when West Virginia as a state faces 40 million surplus apples? They don't have the time or the resources to figure out that solution. So innovation is the first piece. And if we can build solutions that make it easier to recover food, we will recover more food in the short and the long term. And it's as simple as that. The second piece, which I really believe to be kind of the tip of the arrow of all of this, is we need to acknowledge the donor's role in all of this. And I'm really talking about the space of donated food. What I really mean is there is this premise that I've come up against a lot of donor ownership, food donor ownership. The first time I spoke with a food bank, they called me because I was speaking with a cucumber farmer that had all of this surplus. And they said, this is our donor. You're going to confuse the donor. And it's not true. Farmers sell to dozens of customers. Of course, they can understand the fact that they're two charitable organizations that might recover their food. Donor ownership is an oxymoron. You can't own a donor. And I really want FarmLink and everyone in our organization to hold ourselves accountable to that. It is something that I believe would benefit our industry as a whole in avoiding long-term conflicts between organizations that share mutual goals. And then the final piece is collaboration. If you are asking people to be okay with the donors having access to choice, you need to also then promote collaboration. And what I simply mean is, in the first couple of years of FarmLink, I would speak with food banks all over the country. And in different regions, there would be moments of the year where they'd have access to way more of a certain type of produce than they need. There are huge moments of surplus that take place throughout the produce supply chain. Last year, we connected with the West Virginia Department of Agriculture, and they let us know that a handful of apple processors that are turning huge amounts of apples into applesauce, baby food, they pulled out of their contracts a month or two before harvest and largely moved their demand to China and elsewhere. And these West Virginia growers, about a dozen of them, faced 40 million apples with nowhere to go. These are apples that are still on trees, and this is 400 truckloads, each with 40,000 apples on them. So I guess it's 16 million pounds. And this is an example of the scope of need of our food supply chain. And how can you expect a single food bank to solve for that? That's the mismatch. And what was beautiful about this was the West Virginia Department of Agriculture had a budget specifically designed to support farmers in moments like this and feed families. And there's always been that gap of how do you actually get that food to the right places? And so that's where we were able to partner with 100 different communities in 20 different states. And over 6 weeks, we distributed 350 truckloads of apples. The others went to the local communities that didn't need our help. We did some research to try and understand what is the largest amount of food ever recovered in one cohesive effort. And it was like 20 years ago, and it was about a quarter of that volume. And despite that, we see these surpluses every single year. And so that was a really inspiring moment for us where it showed, okay, partnership with, well, government, who's actually putting funds to good use and really effectively deploying them, farmers, hundreds of communities, all working in the same direction, that's possible. And so of the 110 million pounds of food last year that we recovered at FarmLink, over half of that came from what we call collaborations. And that is the most beautiful product of what this industry is capable of.
Did you catch that? In a single effort, FarmLink recovered four times the amount of food from any previous food recovery effort in the past 20 years. Now, that kind of massive success is awesome and worthy of celebration, but as you know, challenges to the status quo are often met with resistance and hostility. And in the nonprofit sector, this can hinder innovation and change.
I've had food banks come forward multiple times and say, well, we just don't trust that you guys aren't going to start selling the food and become a for-profit company. And there's no real foundation for that theory. We're not. We have every intention of being as additive as possible to this space. But I think change in general is uncomfortable. And I think in nonprofit work, there can be an aversion to change and an aversion to risk. And as much as possible, it's our job to show why we are not something to be afraid of.
Ben's willingness to embrace risk and change has helped create an organization that's highly adaptable. And this pays off big time because with each level of success they achieve, they also unlock new opportunities and the corresponding challenges that accompany those new opportunities. It's important to remember a frequent theme we've revisited in multiple future nonprofit podcasts. Change favors those who proactively innovate and experiment. And intentional change requires a culture healthy and stable enough to risk and to fail forward. reacting to a crisis or responding to a challenge will not offer your culture nearly the same reward as proactively learning to experiment with change, innovate, and regularly take appropriate risks.
We, like I said, recovered 110 million pounds of food last year. That is a huge jump up. And still, my head of farmer advocacy said, hey, if you guys gave us $10 million to spend, we'd go rescue 250 million next year. And so we're truly just scratching the surface of what's possible from a food standpoint. But looking ahead at the next few years, it's not just about getting more food to food banks. That's the first piece, is saying, okay, if we can help people view this industry through an abundance mindset by showing them all this food is there, what then needs to happen? And we have to reckon with a couple of realities. The first is, I believe we will max out food banks before we'll end hunger in certain regions of this country. And so how do we make that system more efficient and effective? And the elements that I was talking about with collaboration, I think, are a huge step forward in that. It allows us to act as one, to advocate, to implement new changes. And so I think there's a lot to talk about there. And then the final piece is reckoning with the fact that over 50% of people who are food insecure and know where their local food pantry is will still not go. And so what that tells us is, even if we got all the food in the world to food banks and we made those food banks efficient enough to meet the need of every person who is food insecure, we still wouldn't be solving hunger in this country. And that's where a cultural shift in perspective needs to come into play as well. At the start of the pandemic, there were millions of people that were food insecure, acutely food insecure for the first time. But most of them waited months before even recognizing the fact that they were food insecure. And there is such a stigma around it. And so we need to challenge that. Because why? I mean, I'm holding this bottle of water here, and I could go and buy this for $4 at any store. I could also just fill up my water bottle at a water fountain. Neither experience is more dignified than the other. Water is just as essential as food, but by and large, where there's clean, safe water, there is dignity. And we're nowhere near that being the case with food. So I think that we have a huge role to play with the young people involved with FarmLink, with the collaboration that can take place with this entire industry in storytelling in general, challenging the stigma around how people interact with food, helping people better understand their role in the food system and the food system's role in the climate. And if we can really do that, I think that sets the table, so to speak, for us to confront this problem from all the angles that it really needs to be addressed.
As the story goes, the first food bank was established in 1967 by John Van Hengel after he witnessed a single mother trying to feed her 10 children. While there was no shortage of people willing to share their surplus food with her, she had no way to store it or maintain consistent access. So Van Hengel created a network to collect, store, and distribute food that would otherwise go to waste. Emergency food programs were meant to be just that, emergencies. They were never meant to be a long-term solution, but with more than 1 in 7 Americans, and that's over 46 million people, relying on food banks and food pantries to feed their families, they remain vital. So often, the challenge of food insecurity is overcoming the social stigma and shame associated with that reality, so that those struggling are willing to even acknowledge their need. As Ben says, though, innovation is needed to reimagine these systems and take them into the future.
What is a little bit frustrating is a lot of funders will say, what's the tech, or what's that innovative thing that no one's ever done before that you are able to do? And I want to shake all of them and say, why does it have to fit in that box? Because tens of billions of dollars have gone into building a very robust infrastructure of America's charitable food system. And it is so underutilized in terms of what it could be. And if we, through our vantage point, can gain a sphere of influence that actually allows that industry to really work in the way that it could, I think that that's the most innovative thing that we could possibly do. And there's a lot of ways that we can support it. There's a lot of ways we can make it more sustainable. We spun off a company that is trying to help every hunger fighting charity create a revenue stream for the carbon mitigation that its food rescue work creates. And whether or not that succeeds, the intention of pursuing as many ideas like that as we can, I think, is what this industry needs. Very experienced entrepreneurs have come forward and said, you guys got to build an app, you know, make this a marketplace. And through just calling thousands of farmers, I can tell you, farmers aren't going to use your damn app. And it doesn't matter how good the UI is. They want to text or call or email. And so I don't have the singular innovation that's going to bring us to Valhalla, but I think it comes back to me, the potential of what happens if people really can all sit at the table together.
In nonprofit work, initial efforts often focus on addressing the visible symptoms of a problem. As work continues and understanding deepens, the approach can evolve to target the root cause directly. This shift enables more sustainable solutions that address underlying issues and foster long-term impact within communities. For Ben and FarmLink, that could look like developing ways to predict and minimize surplus crops before they run the risk of becoming food waste. But whatever innovations or changes they embrace, as Ben made very clear, it must offer meaningful support for the mission of FarmLink, which means offering meaningful benefit for the people who will actually use it. A sexy app that lacks empathy for its intended audience is, well, useless. At the end of the day, it always comes back to the mission, and Ben's definition of success for FarmLink is crystal clear.
For FarmLink, if we are looking at the intersection of food and food waste and climate and hunger, success for FarmLink looks like a world where food is so accessible that food assistance doesn't feel like food assistance, it's just food access. And the line between who is receiving support from FarmLink and who is going to Whole Foods is not crystal clear. And I think at that point, we do become obsolete or ubiquitous or whatever it means to no longer be needed in the way that we are today.
The journey Ben and FarmLink have been on since 2020 is inspiring and their impact staggering. Over 1 million pounds of recovered food and counting. So what lessons can nonprofit leaders like you learn from FarmLink and its unstoppable growth over the past 4 years? First, never underestimate the power of purpose. During the pandemic, Ben harnessed the energy and passion of over 100 young people by giving them a cause to rally behind. FarmLink not only had more than enough volunteer power to fuel their early efforts, but its initial surge of support also caught the attention of donors, partner organizations, and media outlets, and all of that combined to amplify their success. Second, outcome over initiatives. Ben's clarity of purpose has given FarmLink the ability to embrace change and innovation, but only as long as it serves their ultimate purpose— to improve food access and reduce food waste. For FarmLink, the how is less important than the why, and that means they stay flexible and open to seizing new opportunities as they come. I find the strongest and most sustainable nonprofits hold tightly to vision and hold loosely to strategy. And Ben and FarmLink are a great example of that. And third, embrace collaboration and ecosystem thinking, which is an alternative approach to delivering value, which moves away from a traditional linear focus on products to a more holistic understanding of how companies, customers, and suppliers connect and the value they can exchange. FarmLink's collaborative approach to forging partnerships with farmers, government agencies, and local communities exemplifies how ecosystem thinking can help solve systemic problems. In the nonprofit sector, we need to reorganize our interconnectedness, and that means there are often opportunities to get where we're going faster together. Without cooperation among stakeholders, the FarmLink project would not be possible, but Ben's conviction that a solution to the food waste problem was within arm's reach created the impetus for that cooperation. Nonprofit work is always a team effort, and having a visionary leader with a singular focus at the helm provides direction, inspiration, and a sense of cohesion that can accelerate results. I'm Ted Vaughn, and this has been a special episode of the Camp Redwood Sessions of Future Nonprofit. If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more, subscribe to the podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts, and visit makehistoric.com.
Future Nonprofit is a production of Lower Street and Historic Agency. Produced by Mark Miller, Ben Crannell, James Bladel, and Ted Vaughn. Edited by Ben Crannell. Visit futurenonprofit.com for a transcript of this episode.